Chapter 7 Helm's Deep. The sun was already westering as they rolled from Edoras, and the light of it was in their eyes, turning all the rolling fields of Rohan to a golden haze. There was a beaten way, north-westward along the foothills of the White Mountains, and this they followed, up and down in a green country, crossing small, swift streams by many fords. Far ahead and to their right the misty mountains loomed. Ever darker and taller they grew as the miles went by. The sun went slowly down before them. Evening came behind. The host rode on. Need drove them. Fearing to come too late, they rode with all the speed they could, pausing seldom. Swift and enduring were the steeds of Rohan, but there were many leagues to go. 40 leagues and more it was, as a bird flies, from Edoras to the fords of the Isen, where they hoped to find the king's men that held back the hosts of Saruman. Night closed about them. At last they halted to make their camp. They had ridden for some 5 hours, and were far out upon the western plain, yet more than half their journey lay still before them. In a great circle, under the starry sky and the waxing moon, they now made their bivouac. They lit no fires, for they were uncertain of events, but they set a ring of mounted guards about them, and scouts rode out far ahead, passing like shadows in the folds of the land. The slow night passed without tidings or alarm. At dawn the horns sounded, and within an hour they took the road again. There were no clouds overhead yet, but a heaviness was in the air. It was hot for the season of the year. The rising sun was hazy, and behind it, following it slowly up the sky, there was a growing darkness, as of a great storm moving out of the east. And away in the northwest there seemed to be another darkness brooding about the feet of the misty mountains, a shadow that crept slowly from the wizard's veil. Gandalf dropped back to where Legolas rode beside Éomer.
"You have the keen eyes of your fair kindred, Legolas," he said, "and they can tell a sparrow from a finch a league off. Tell me, can you see anything away yonder toward Isengard?"
"Many miles lie between," said Legolas, gazing thither and shading his eyes with his long hand. "I can see a darkness. There are shapes moving in it, great shapes far away upon the bank of the river, but what they are I can't tell. It's not mist or cloud that defeats my eyes. There is a veiling shadow that some power lays upon the land, and it marches slowly downstream. It's as if the twilight under endless trees were flowing downwards from the hills."
"And behind us comes a very storm of Mordor," said Gandalf. "It will be a black night."
As the second day of their riding drew on, the heaviness in the air increased. In the afternoon, the dark clouds began to overtake them, a sombre canopy with great billowing edges flecked with dazzling light. The sun went down, blood-red in a smoking haze. The spears of the riders were tipped with fire as the last shafts of light kindled the steep faces of the peaks of Three Hearn. Now very near they stood, on the northernmost arm of the White Mountains, 3 jagged horns staring at the sunset. In the last red glow, men in the vanguard saw a black speck, a horseman riding back towards them. They halted, awaiting him. He came, a weary man with dinted helm and cloven shield. Slowly he climbed from his horse and stood there a while, gasping. At length he spoke.
"Is Éomer here?" he asked. "You come at last, but too late, and with too little strength. Things have gone evilly since Théodred fell. We were driven back yesterday over the Isen with great loss. Many perished at the crossing. Then at night fresh forces came over the river against our camp. All Isengard must be emptied, and Saruman has armed the wild hillmen and herd folk of Dunland beyond the rivers, and these also he loosed upon us. We were overmastered. The shield wall was broken. Erkenbrand of Westfold has drawn off those men he could gather towards his fastness in Helm's Deep. The rest are scattered. Where is Eomer? Tell him there's no hope ahead. He should return to Edoras before the wolves of Isengard come there.
Théoden had sat silent, hidden from the man's sight behind his guards. Now he urged his horse forward.
"Come, stand before me, Keorl," he said. "I am here. The last host of the Eorlingers has ridden forth. It will not return without battle."
The man's face lightened with joy and wonder. He drew himself up. Then he knelt, offering his notched sword to the king.
"Command me, my lord," he cried, "and pardon me. I thought—"
"You thought I remained in Medoseld, bent like an old tree under winter snow. So it was when you rode to war. But a west wind has shaken the boughs," said Théoden. "Give this man a fresh horse. Let us ride to the help of Erkenbrand."
While Théoden was speaking, Gandalf rode a short way ahead, and he sat there alone, gazing north to Isengard and west to the setting sun. Now he came back.
"Ride, Théoden," he said. "Ride to Helm's Deep. Go not to the fords of Isen, and don't tarry in the plain. I must leave you for a while. Shadowfax must bear me now on a swift errand."
Turning to Aragorn and Éomer and the men of the king's household, he cried,
"Keep well the Lord of the Mark till I return. Await me at Helm's Gate. Farewell."
He spoke a word to Shadowfax, and like an arrow from the bow the great horse sprang away. Even as they looked, he was gone. A flash of silver in the sunset, a wind over the grass, a shadow that fled and passed from sight. Snowmane snorted and reared, eager to follow, but only a swift bird on the wing could have overtaken him.
"What does that mean?" said one of the guards to Harmer.
"That Gandalf Greyhame has need of haste," answered Harmer. "Ever he goes and comes unlooked for."
"Wormtongue, were he here, wouldn't find it hard to explain," said the other.
"True enough," said Harmer, "but for myself, I'll wait until I see Gandalf again."
"Maybe you'll wait long," said the other.
The host turned away now from the roads to the fords of Isen and bent their course southward. Night fell, and still they rode on. The hills drew near, but the tall peaks of Freehirn were already dim against the darkening sky. Still some miles away, on the far side of the Westfold Vale, lay a green coombe, a great bay in the mountains, out of which a gorge opened in the hills. Men of that land called it Helm's Deep, after a hero of old wars who had made his refuge there. Ever steeper and narrower, it wound inward from the north under the shadow of the Freehirn, till the crow-haunted cliffs rose like mighty towers on either side, shutting out the light. At Helm's Gate, before the mouth of the deep, there was a heel of rock thrust outward by the northern cliff. There upon its spur stood high walls of ancient stone, and within them was a lofty tower. Men said that in the far-off days of the glory of Gondor, the sea-kings had built here this fastness with the hands of giants. The Hornburg, it was called, for a trumpet sounded upon the tower, echoed in the deep behind, as if armies long forgotten were issuing to war from caves beneath the hills. A wall, too, the men of old had made from the Hornburg to the southern cliff, barring the entrance to the gorge. Beneath it, by a wide culvert, the deeping stream passed out. About the feet of the Horn Rock it wound, and flowed then in a gully through the midst of a wide green gore, sloping gently down from Helm's Gate to Helm's Dyke. Thence it fell into the deeping coombe, and out into the Westfold Vale. There in the Hornburg of Helm's Gate, Erkenbrand, master of Westfold on the borders of the Mark, now dwelt. As the days darkened with threats of war, being wise, he had repaired the wall and made the fastness strong. The riders were still in the low valley before the mouth of the coombe, when cries and horn blasts were heard from their scouts that went in front. Out of the darkness arrows whistled. Swiftly a scout rode back and reported that wolf riders were abroad in the valley, and that a host of orcs, and wild men were hurrying southward from the fords of Isen and seemed to be making for Helm's Deep. "We found many of our folk lying slain as they fled thither," said the scout, "and we've met scattered companies, going this way and that, leaderless. What has become of Erkenbrandt none seems to know. It's likely that he'll be overtaken ere he can reach Helm's Gate, if he's not already perished."
"Has aught been seen of Gandalf?" asked Théoden.
"Yes, lord. Many have seen an old man in white upon a horse, passing hither and thither over the plains like a wind in the grass. Some thought he was Saruman. It's said that he went away ere nightfall towards Isengard. Some say also that Wormtongue was seen earlier, going northward with a company of orcs."
"It will go ill with Wormtongue if Gandalf comes upon him," said Théoden. "Nevertheless, I miss now both my counsellors, the old and the new. But in this need, we've no better choice than to go on, as Gandalf said, to Helm's Gate, whether Erkenbrand be there or no. Is it known how great is the host that comes from the north?"
"It's very great," said the scout. "He that flies counts every foeman twice. Yet I've spoken to stout-hearted men, and I don't doubt that the main strength of the enemy is many times as great as all that we have here."
"Then let us be swift," said Aelmer. "Let us drive through such foes as are already between us and the fastness. There are caves in Helm's Deep where hundreds may lie hid, and secret ways lead thence up on to the hills."
"Trust not to secret ways," said the king. "Saruman has long spied out this land. Still in that place our defence may last long. Let us go."
Aragorn and Legolas went out now with Aemer in the van. On through the dark night they rode, ever slower as the darkness deepened and their way climbed southward, higher and higher into the dim folds about the mountain's feet. They found few of the enemy before them. Here and there they came upon roving bands of orcs, but they fled ere the riders could take or slay them.
"It won't be long, I fear," said Aemer, "ere the coming of the king's host will be known to the leaders of our enemies, Saruman or whatever captain he's sent forth."
The rumour of war grew behind them. Now they could hear, borne over the dark, the sound of harsh singing. They'd climbed far up into the deeping coombe when they looked back. Then they saw torches, countless points of fiery light upon the black fields behind, scattered like red flowers, or winding up from the lowlands in long flickering lines. Here and there a larger blaze leapt up.
"It's a great host and follows us hard," said Aragorn.
"They bring fire," said Théoden, "and they're burning as they come, rick, cot, and tree. This was a rich vale and had many homesteads. Alas for my folk!
Would that day was here, and we might ride down upon them like a storm out of the mountains," said Aragorn. "It grieves me to fly before them."
"We needn't fly much further," said Aelmer. "Not far ahead now lies Helm's Dyke, an ancient trenchant rampart scored across the coombe, 2 furlongs below Helm's Gate. There we can turn and give battle."
"Nay, we're too few to defend the dyke," said Théoden. "It's a mile long or more, and the breach in it is wide."
"At the breach our rear guard must stand if we're pressed," said Aemer.
There was neither star nor moon when the riders came to the breach in the dyke, where the stream from above passed out, and the road beside it ran down from the Hornburg. The rampart loomed suddenly before them, a high shadow beyond a dark pit. As they rode up, a sentinel challenged them.
"The Lord of the Mark rides to Helm's Gate," Aemer answered. "I, Aemer, son of Aemond, speak."
"This is good tidings beyond hope," said the sentinel. "Hasten, the enemy is on your heels."
The host passed through the breach and halted on the sloping sward above. They now learned to their joy that Erkenbrand had left many men to hold Helm's Gate, and more had since escaped thither.
"Maybe we have 1,000 fit to fight on foot," said Gamling, an old man, the leader of those that watched the dyke. "But most of them have seen too many winters, as I have, or too few, as my son's son here. What news of Erkenbrand?"
"Word came yesterday that he was retreating thither with all that's left of the best riders of Westfold, but he's not come."
"I fear that he won't come now,"
said Aylmer. "Our scouts have gained no news of him, and the enemy fills all the valley behind us."
"I would that he'd escaped," said Théoden. "He was a mighty man. In him lived again the valour of Helm the Hammerhand. But we can't await him here. We must draw all our forces now behind the walls. Are you well stored? We bring little provision, for we rode forth to open battle, not to a siege."
"Behind us in the caves of the deep are three parts of the folk of Westfold, old and young, children and women," said Gamling. "But great store of food, and many beasts and their fodder have also been gathered there."
"That is well," said Aylmer. "They are burning or despoiling all that is left in the vale."
"If they come to bargain for our goods at Helm's Gate, they'll pay a high price," said Gamling.
The king and his riders passed on. Before the causeway that crossed the stream they dismounted. In a long file they led their horses up the ramp and passed within the gates of the Hornburg. There they were welcomed again with joy and renewed hope, for now there were men enough to man both the burg and the barrier wall. Quickly Aylmer set his men in readiness. The king and the men of his household were in the Hornburg, and there also were many of the Westfold men. But on the deeping wall and its tower, and behind it, Aylmer arrayed most of the strength that he had, for here the defence seemed more doubtful, if the assault were determined and in great force. The horses were led far up the deep under such guard as could be spared. The deeping wall was 20 feet high, and so thick that four men could walk abreast along the top, sheltered by a parapet over which only a tall man could look. Here and there were clefts in the stone through which men could shoot. The battlement could be reached by a stair running down from a door in the outer court of the Hornburg. Three flights of steps led also up onto the wall from the deep behind. But in front it was smooth, and the great stones of it were set with such skill that no foothold could be found at their joints, and at the top they hung over like a sea-delved cliff. Gimli stood leaning against the breastwork upon the wall. Legolas sat above on the parapet, fingering his bow, and peering out into the gloom.
"This is more to my liking," said the dwarf, stamping on the stones. "Ever my heart rises as we draw near the mountains. There's good rock here. This country has tough bones. I felt them in my feet as we came up from the dyke. Give me a year and 100 of my kin, and I'd make this a place that armies would break upon like water."
"I don't doubt it," said Legolas. "But you're a dwarf, and dwarves are strange folk. I don't like this place, and I shall like it no more by the light of day. But you comfort me, Gimli, and I'm glad to have you standing nigh with your stout legs and your hard axe. I wish there were more of your kin among us. But even more would I give for 100 good archers of Mirkwood. We shall need them. The Rohirrim have good bowmen after their fashion, but there are too few here, too few."
"It's dark for archery," said Gimli. "Indeed, it's time for sleep. Sleep. I feel the need of it, as never I thought any dwarf could. Riding is tiring work, yet my axe is restless in my hand. Give me a row of Orkneys and room to swing, and all weariness will fall from me."
A slow time passed. Far down in the valley scattered fires still burned. The hosts of Isengard were advancing in silence now. Their torches could be seen winding up the coombe in many lines. Suddenly from the dyke yells and screams, and the fierce battle-cries of men broke out. Flaming brands appeared above the brink and clustered thickly at the breach.
Then they scattered and vanished.
Men came galloping back over the field and up the ramp to the gate of the Hornburg. The rear guard of the Westfolders had been driven in.
"The enemy is at hand," they said. "We loosed every arrow that we had, and filled the dyke with orcs. But it won't halt them long. Already they're scaling the bank at many points, thick as marching ants. But we've taught them not to carry torches."
It was now past midnight. The sky was utterly dark, and the stillness of the heavy air foreboded storm. Suddenly the clouds were seared by a blinding flash. Branched lightning smote down upon the eastward hills. For a staring moment the watchers on the wall saw the space between them and the dyke lit with white light. It was boiling and crawling with black shapes, some squat and broad, some tall and grim, with high helms and sable shields. Hundreds and hundreds more were pouring over the dyke and through the breach. The dark tide flowed up to the walls from cliff to cliff. Thunder rolled in the valley. Rain came lashing down. Arrows thick as the rain came whistling over the battlements and fell clinking and glancing on the stones. Some found a mark. The assault on Helm's Deep had begun, but no sound or challenge was heard within. No answering arrows came. The assailing hosts halted, foiled by the silent menace of rock and wall. Ever and again the lightning tore aside the darkness. Then the orcs screamed, waving spear and sword, and shooting a cloud of arrows at any that stood revealed upon the battlements. And the men of the mark amazed looked out, as it seemed to them, upon a great field of dark corn, tossed by a tempest of war, and every ear glinted with barbed light.
Brazen trumpets sounded. The enemy surged forward, some against the deeping wall, others towards the causeway and the ramp that led up to the Hornburg gates. There the hugest orcs were mustered, and the wild men of the Dunland Fells. A moment they hesitated, and then on they came. The lightning flashed, and blazoned upon every helm and shield the ghastly hand of Isengard was seen. They reached the summit of the rock. They drove towards the gates. Then at last an answer came. A storm of arrows met them, and a hail of stones. They wavered, broke, and fled back, and then charged again, broke, and charged again, and each time, like the incoming sea, they halted at a higher point. Again trumpets rang, and a press of roaring men leapt forth. They held their great shields above them like a roof, while in their midst they bore two trunks of mighty trees. Behind them orc archers crowded, sending a hail of darts against the bowmen on the walls. They gained the gates. The trees, swung by strong arms, smote the timbers with a rending boom. If any man fell, crushed by a stone hurtling from above, two others sprang to take his place. Again and again the great ram swung and crashed. Eomer and Aragorn stood together on the deeping wall. They heard the roar of voices and the thudding of the rams, and then in a sudden flash of light they beheld the peril of the gates.
"Come!" said Aragorn. "This is the hour when we draw swords together."
Running like fire, they sped along the wall and up the steps, and passed into the outer court upon the rock. As they ran, they gathered a handful of stout swordsmen. There was a small postern door that opened in an angle of the burg wall on the west, where the cliff stretched out to meet it. On that side a narrow path ran around towards the great gate, between the wall and the sheer brink of the rock. Together Eomer and Aragorn sprang through the door, their men close behind. The swords flashed from the sheath as one.
"Guthwina," cried Eomer, "Guthwina for the mark."
"Andúril," cried Aragorn, "Andúril for the Dúnedain."
Charging from the side, they hurled themselves upon the wild men.
Andúril rose and fell, gleaming with white fire. A shout went up from wall and tower. "Andúril! Andúril goes to war! The blade that was broken shines again!"
Dismayed, the rammers let fall the trees and turned to fight. But the wall of their shields was broken as by a lightning stroke, and they were swept away, hewn down, or cast over the rock into the stony stream below. The orc archers shot wildly and then fled. For a moment Eomer and Aragorn halted before the gates. The thunder was rumbling in the distance now. The lightning flickered still, far off among the mountains in the south. A keen wind was blowing from the north again. The clouds were torn and drifting, and stars peeped out. And above the hills of the Coombside the westering moon rode, glimmering yellow in the storm-rack.